Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hey everyone, this is Brad Larson, founder of the Property Management Mastermind. Thanks to our sponsors, we've been able to compile a tremendous list of offers and discounts, with this list expanding every episode. To see that complete offering, visit our website at propertymanagementmastermind.com. I also wanted to announce the Pulling Back the Curtain Conference going on in August this year in Denver, Colorado. For more information on that, visit our site for the link. Lastly, be sure to check out our Facebook group page and become a member.
Are you tired of chasing tenants to comply with having renter's insurance? Insurance Management Group can solve this problem with a master tenant's insurance policy. Keep tenants in compliance with your lease agreement and help protect all parties involved. A master tenant's insurance policy can also add an additional revenue stream to your business. Contact Derek Scott at 918-728-8992 or visit imgadvisors.com. To learn more, listen to the Property Management Mastermind Show podcast, episode number 36.
Choose Seacoast Commerce Bank as your property management bank of choice. Seacoast Commerce Bank specializes in trust accounts and business banking for property managers. One of their best features is a cash analysis program where they can assist in paying your property management related invoices. Contact Allison at 619-988-6708 to learn more. And be sure to listen to the Property Management Mastermind Podcast, episode number 26, about Seacoast Commerce Bank.
Hey everyone, thanks for joining us. In today's episode, I have Matt Spahn. He is an estate planning attorney here in the local San Antonio region. He and I have been friends for 15, 17 years, somewhere in there. And we're going to talk about estate planning using trust and how those relate and apply to property management company owners. It's a really good listen on what a trust is. And he's a Dave Ramsey approved guy. So this is as legit of an attorney you can get in this realm. So it's a good episode. So pay attention. Take care. And welcome everybody to another edition of the Property Management Mastermind Show. I'm your host, Brad Larson. And today's guest, I'm very fortunate to have a very good friend of mine, Matt Spahn. Now, Matt is an attorney here in San Antonio. And without stealing a lot of his thunder, I'm going to give you kind of a quick bio and hopefully I don't botch it up. So Matt's a Texas A&M grad, big fan. He's been a licensed practicing attorney in the San Antonio region for a long time. And I've known him for close to 15 years. So given some history here before I let Matt take off is... Matt and I got to know each other through some sales. So back when I was doing real estate sales, I helped them sell their home. I helped them buy another place. And they've just been great to work with through the years. And we've had referrals together. And, you know, we use them to form our trust about 5 or 6 years ago. And so this episode, we're going to be talking about trust formations. And so, Matt, I appreciate you letting me get that out there. How are you today?
I am awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. So I probably butchered your bio. So I want you to give me a few minutes, kind of tell us who you are.
Well, yeah, I'm a Texas-born native, fourth generation, grew up in Gonzales County, you know, where the first shot of the Texas Revolution was fired. And after A&M, I went to Baylor Law School. And the difference in me in law school is that I took every class they offered in estate planning, which about 1% of my colleagues did. And that's true. When we survey law schools around the country, every good law school has one class called wills and probate. Everyone has to take it. Typically, no questions on the bar about it. And people just go on about their business. And yet, you know, the employment lawyer down the street will knock out your will. And, you know, your corporate attorney, oh, yeah, he'll do your will for you. But estate planning is a lot more than that. And so most 99% of attorneys never took a class called trusts. They never took a course with that name in it. They don't know what it is. And so you'll get even opinions that aren't necessarily informed about, oh, they're great. Are they bad? Why don't we talk about what they really are and let people decide for themselves how they work and why they might use them? And so that's what I've done for my clients now for 27 years. I have been creating trust for them for 27 years, helping them put real estate in it, get real estate out of it. And it's really a wonderful tool. And it's just a tool.
So the root of this episode is I wanted to bring this to the other listeners who are a lot of times they're business company owners. They have a good understanding of the LLC nature, the corporation nature, all that stuff. But really, this is the next level. And we did this, my wife and I and my family, we did this a number of years ago. And as we mentioned in the previous episode, there was the reason we did it is we started to freak out a little bit. And you probably had this magic moment with a lot of your clients is, you know, my wife and I, we had all this insurance money going around. You know, life insurance for me, life insurance for her. So what if we got killed in a car accident? What's going to happen to our kids? And all of a sudden, there's millions on the table. Millions on the table. So who's going to be taking care of our young children? And it doesn't come about, you know, who's going to be the patron saint of taking care of our children. It's who's going to get the money. And then, oh, by the way, the kids go with the money. And so we started to really kind of freak out about that. It's like, you know, we need to talk to Matt. We need to sit down. We need to set up a trust formation. And this is where you took us and took us to that next level. And so I wanted to talk about that. So give us kind of, you know, you do this every day. So you're pitching us, but one thing I want you to go into before you get into kind of the trust and all that good stuff about it is tell us about your history with Dave Ramsey and how that's all worked out.
Oh gosh. So people will ask me, do you really know Dave Ramsey? And I said, yeah. He hugged me last time he saw me. And, so Dave Ramsey has an ELP type of program, and realtors can be an ELP, and accountants can be, and insurance people can be, and financial advisors can be. But that's the only four. No attorneys, no one else. But you have to be one of those professionals, and he wants you to have the heart of a teacher, right, to be a good professional. Well, he knew me for 2 years and vetted me before I got his recommendation. And I'm the only person that practices law that he recommends anywhere in the nation. And so it's a very, very special relationship we have. Last time he was in town, we got to have lunch together. It was November, just 2018, and had a really good time with him. And he had other sponsors at this event. He had a big event where thousands of people showed up, and it was simulcast to thousands of people that night. But, you know, Dave told the whole group about the long relationship we've had, which has been over a dozen years, that he has recommended me. He has talked about me live on his show that's on over 500 stations a few times. But with all humility, I say, I have seen a lot of people because Dave Ramsey has recommended it. He gives good advice.
And I feel so jaded a little bit, or jilted, let's say. That's a better term, because I applied to go to that lunch, but I didn't win. So I guess,
oh, you did. That's right. I gave away a free lunch.
That's right.
You
gave away a free lunch with Dave. And I'm like, oh, yes, please let me win. But it was a drawing type situation. Great little marketing piece. Go into that real quick.
Oh, yeah. So that time he was in town, we made people send us, I think the email was supposed to be 50 words or less. And we had, we sent it out to our clients, which of course you're one, and you responded. And it was hilarious what you sent us. I can't remember what it was, but gosh, when we read it, I said, hey, Brad has a great sense of humor. Anyway. It was the winner was a wonderful young husband and father of the one or two kids. And so he really appreciated getting to win that and meet Dave Ramsey and all those good things.
That's excellent. That was really neat. I love the marketing stuff on that. So yeah, let's get into this a little bit. So going back a little bit, we got into this estate planning, family trust, and some of the stories you were telling me were amazing. And before we go deep into that, I love the one where, you know, we had this explosion of South Texas oil money. And so how many times have you told me, or every time we've had a conversation, people are coming to you with gobs of money, you know, unbelievable, hard to even understand money, and say, we're getting this every month from the oil companies because of all of our land producing oil. What do we do? So tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's kind of fun to hear about.
Well, so people will say something about, well, if I win the lottery, and I say, well, I don't know if it's dozens, I can't put a number on it. If it's 100 clients, I have more than 100 that probably get royalties like this now. And I said, it's just like winning the lottery, you know? And I actually have two real lottery winners that I've helped. One was after the fact and one was before the fact. But you know, salt of the earth people is what is amazing. We are surrounded by so many good people. And typically the person who is blessed with all these monies through royalties and bonuses and all that, they don't really change their ways. They might finally get some new fence put up out there. They might go on a little vacation, but yeah, we're talking about $1 million a month, you know, kind of money. And, but it's the same issues whether we have that many zeros or not. You know, Brad, it's about, what if my wife doesn't survive me in the car crash? What if she does survive me, but she is incapacitated? What if my child is incapacitated from a car accident and doesn't at 18 become, you know, the adult like most people do? What if my child at 20? Estate planning and what we're going to be talking about, of course, is just all those things. You know, zeros are zeros and they're great. We get more choices with them. We can bless our families and our communities more with them. And it's not a zero-sum game. You know, the rising tide raises all the ships. So the economic wealth of this country is a real blessing, including from our oil and gas. But it's something to be considered carefully.
So one of the big questions that everyone's going to ask is, why do I need this? Why should I consider it? What's it going to do for me? So answer the why behind this, and then that can take us into the what.
Well, the way I see it, death works a chasm. And so when you think about, here we are, and there's only one way out of this world that I remember until he returns again. But how do we get from here to here, from point A to point B, when death has worked this chasm? And so I think of estate planning, sometimes I use the analogy, it's a bridge, but it's also a vehicle. And so we have to have a way to get what you have and what's important, what's precious to you, to get it from here to there. So why we have to get that. When people die with assets in their name, the third parties of the world have no idea what's supposed to happen to that piece of property. I mean, a bank account just in your name would be frozen until someone showed up with letters testamentary, because you, being your wife, doesn't have any authority over you now, really. Now you can say, yes, she does, she's my boss. But you know what I'm saying? In a hospital, she'll be told, you don't get to make decisions for him. We don't care that you're married to him. And if your mom or dad or son who's 24 showed up, I mean, it's 2019. It's not 1969 anymore. In 1969, mom or dad had control even over a young adult, and husband over wife and wife over husband. Today, the third parties of the world, bankers, doctors, and it's not for the wrong reasons, but it's the legalism, you know, the extra legalism of this world means you need a piece of paper. I mean, think of yourself as a realtor and you know that this is owned by Jane Smith, and yet John Smith says, no, I can sign for her. I have a power of attorney. You know how much that thing is used as a license to steal, et cetera, et cetera. So we have issues with death. That creates a real issue. We also have issues when people become incapacitated. We need a plan so that when people are incapacitated and when they die, everything still goes okay. Things can still be sold. Things can still be rented. Things can happen. Businesses can be run.
That's a great point, because you touch on the exact portion of the why I really want you to nail down, because it came up on a thread somewhere that, you know, what is your succession plan if you were to go away as the business owner? Everyone's like, oh, it goes to my spouse, you know, whatever else. It goes to my kids, whatever else. Does it? Question mark. And this is where I want you to chime in, because what if something happened to a sole business owner? What happens to that business? Because look at what we have. We have millions under management. We have, you know, 20 some employees. We have, you know, we're managing, you know, 800 some residents. You know, it's just, there's a lot going on in the business. And if that falters, I mean, we're doing people wrong in a lot of different ways outside of just of our family. So go into that, some of that with us.
Well, so more than half of my clients are business owners. They could be doctors. They could be lawyers. Yes, lawyers come to me. Smart ones who know they don't know estate planning will let me do that for them. But a lot of them, you know, have invented a new kind of widget or service widgets. You know, they do whatever. And a lot of them are in the real estate game. And so, well, sometimes they have LLCs or PLLCs or corporations or other things. And so who runs those things, especially since you have to be a licensed professional? Well, you say, well, we can get another broker into this, you know, realty company within this amount of time. I understand. And not to get too far into the weeds either on the technicalities, and states, you know, vary. But by gosh, you know, your house is not your biggest asset. Your 401k or IRA is not your biggest asset. You don't have a bank account that's your biggest asset. All your bank accounts are things put together. It's your business that's your biggest asset. It's what drives everything. It's what drives your income. How is there going to be a smooth, seamless, successful transition if you're incapacitated or when you die? There must be a plan there so that the next, I mean, it's like, I was at the senior games yesterday. Yes, I am in my 50s and I qualify for the senior games. Just that's all it takes. And, you know, we were out there running track. And what happens when the baton is dropped between the runners? That is not so bad when you're having fun running around a track with 94-year-olds. And we had one running with us yesterday. But it's really bad when you're a business owner. That baton, what happens to your business when no one's, when you go on vacation, Brad, for a week, you know how bad it can be or how bad it could be, except you plan for that week. What if you're never coming back? I mean, you know things could go wrong. You've got to have some smooth, you've got to have a plan.
To help illustrate this point, I want you to dive into, if you don't have it, it goes into probate. And then probate is a nightmare in itself. So if you kind of give, you know, people are thinking out there, I'm fine, whatever. I'll just, you know, write a will on a napkin and we'll be fine. But talk about the probate as this is your alternative. If you don't have something in place, you go to probate and all these negative things happen because of probate. Go from there.
So we can have a will or we cannot have a will. But we won't know if the will is valid either way until you have died and we have gotten to the court. So to get to the court to prove up the will, you're talking at least weeks with the most diligent. But first, we're going to have to get an attorney, and he or she's going to look over the will, apply for probate. The court's going to say it's going to be posted on the courthouse walls for 10 days. Now, you realtors know about the courthouse and real property and things like that. But then we might get a hearing. Now, in some places, that can be 3 months. I mean, just because they're backlogged with probate cases. But even if it was 2 months, imagine the fact that your business now, before the first hearing in probate, has been on hiatus for 2 months with no clear leader. And the realty board doesn't know who really controls it. And no one at the business really knows who controls it. And bills have to be paid and money has to come in. And who can endorse the checks and deposit them? Because you're not there. And so even with the best will, you would probably be, if not weeks, months before anyone had authority to come in and start running a business that's not worth 100% anymore of what it was. It was worth X. And that percentage of X has been going down every day since your demise or your incapacity. But wills aren't anything until they're taken to a court by an attorney, following all the rules, jumping through all the hoops. And finally, when a judge gets the time to hear it, goes, it's not valid. Well, then you got bigger problems. But it is valid. Oh, great. Now I finally get to start protecting the assets, get to start doing the things that haven't been done for a couple of months. And we're behind the eight ball big time now. Big, big problem. Wills do a terrible job of transferring assets on death. And if they do, it's only on one death. Wills don't do anything for you if you're incapacitated or if your spouse is incapacitated in the car wreck that kills you. It doesn't protect and preserve any of your assets. We know that predators and creditors are first in line before the beneficiaries. Probate says, oh no, all creditors and everyone else gets paid, right? And then finally, when everything's done, would a widow, would a widower, would kids or anyone else get the assets? That is always at least months, but typically more than a year before we're done with that part. So before anything is really transferred, over a year typically. Wow. That is not okay.
Scary stuff. And a lot of us are thinking, well, we just want to hand it down to our kids or, you know, give it to one of our colleagues. Is that clearly laid out? Is that all legalized? Notarized and legal by an attorney?
Right.
You know, is it all set up correct where it can just be easily done? Now, take me into the explanation of how the trust would make that a very seamless, easy transition. So the loved ones that you're working so hard to provide for don't get hosed over on this deal. So that's where I get the comparison. You know, you got the will side, the probate side, but then, hey, this is the easy side, because if you do this and you set it up here, it goes easily to them. And I guess my personal fear is, you know, I have young kids, 11 and 9, as we're talking. And if something were to go wrong, do we know for sure that they're going to have an opportunity at this business, or is it going to be like given away or sold off at auction or something? So take us through some of that.
The four weaknesses I tell people about wills and probate are the four strengths in complete contrast with a trust. And so the first thing I say about a trust, this is a little funny, but a little different than what you're thinking. I say the great thing about a trust is it privately, instantly, automatically, safely, efficiently, and sequentially transfers assets on deaths. That's that sequential part. And so when I see, especially with a couple, but even with an individual, I go, you know, you want all these assets to go to this person. And they go, yes. And I go, what if that person doesn't survive you? They go, oh, I didn't think about that. Well, if you're a married guy and you have kids, you go, well, I want it to go to the kids. Oh, okay, makes sense. Okay. So we want it to go to each other, and then we want it to go to the kids. So could your spouse die at the same time as you? Yes, we ride in cars together. Okay. So What if, though, your spouse survived you by 2 years? Would you still want it to go to your kids? Yes. You see, wills don't do that. Wills transfer assets on one death only. Your will can say it all goes to your wife or it all goes to your kids. It can't say both. That's what a trust does. A trust does this sequential transfer of assets. It goes from A to B to C to D, and you can just keep going in a trust. See, a trust doesn't die when a person dies. A will is just a contract taken to court after a person has died saying, do this and you're done. It may take you a year or two, but you're done, executor. A trust says, no, for all the right reasons. I work for this stuff. I earn this stuff. I'm going to say where it goes, not only when I die, but when you die. We're agreeing it's going to go to each other and to our kids. And you could get remarried, darling, and I don't blame you if you do. But you're not giving my stuff to the next husband who's going to give it to his kids, and our kids get left out of everything we work for. You don't want it. I don't want it. So let's agree. Let's have a trust to, one, transfer assets on deaths, plural, sequentially, privately, instantly, no court, safely, efficiently. But number two, the trust is going to protect and preserve the assets. You see, the trust code says that for the surviving beneficiary or beneficiaries, that the if you put the right language in the trust, which we always do, but that no further spouse, divorcing spouse, creditor, bankruptcy, judgment, or lien could come take the assets from the people. You see, you didn't put the asset in there. It's my asset, especially like for the kids. No one can take it from you. And so we get an amazing amount of asset protection and preservation when your trust ends up in the beneficiary's hands. Now, they could be prudent and frugal and able to manage it themselves in the trust that they've inherited from you. Or maybe they're not. Maybe they're 11 and 9. Maybe they're 12 and 10. Maybe they're 22 and 18. Whatever age they may be, we know that they may not be ready to handle the asset. We can let them grow into that, but we need to protect and preserve the asset for them. So first we get this transfer sequentially and privately and all that. Then we get this amazing protection that no one could take it from our survivors. Then we get a plan, third, a plan for incapacity. So the trust code says, well, this trust, which kind of think of it like a corporation, but different. So it's not exactly the same thing. It's a contractual relationship that we make in this thing called a trust. But what it lets us do is say, somebody else can take over if I'm incapacitated. Well, you could, darling. But if not you, well, then my brother Bill could or your sister Sue could. And so the trust has this one, two, and third benefit, which is a plan for incapacity. Your incapacity, her incapacity, his incapacity, the kid's incapacity because they're not adults yet, the kid's incapacity because they are 30, but they suffer from an injury or an illness that prevents them from being the prudent, frugal people. Maybe they're alcoholics. Maybe they're drug addicts. You'd still want your assets to benefit them, but you'd want it in a very special way so that it wouldn't hurt them. It wouldn't harm them. I mean, that's what it is to be a parent, is to, you know, parent people. But what we get out of all this is the fourth thing is promoting peace and harmony. Because really, as we mature, especially get to be old enough to run the senior games and things, we start really looking at our family, and that next generation is growing up and they're getting married and having kids. We really want our estate and our plan to promote peace and harmony.
Property Meld is made for maintenance work automation. Property Meld will work to schedule, remind, verify completion, and follow up with your residents automatically while providing the best-in-class communication system for your ease of use, your vendors, and your tenants. Begin reducing maintenance coordination time and increasing tenant satisfaction today. Learn more at propertymeld.com.
The sequential part really hits home, and that's kind of what we were talking about. And because, okay, we go away, Leah and I, the wife, go away, and all of a sudden, here's this business, here's all these this homes, these all this other stuff that's going to go to them, but they're 11 and 9. And so that we have designated to go to somebody else ahead of them, and they're adults, they're family members, and then those family members can decide what has to happen at that point. And I'm sure, you know, if you really wanted to, you can say, okay, upon 18 years old or 21 years old, they can take over the asset, right? Whatever that could be. Whatever there's the sequential part, whatever you can dream of, I'm sure can be put in there. Is that correct?
Correct. And so what we realize, if we really stop and think about our children, they're as mortal as we are. And I lost friends in high school. I lost friends in college. I've certainly lost a lot of my classmates since then. I mean, some I've lost, you know, two out of my three best friends I've lost in my life. And so we don't know when our time is. And we don't know when it could be just incapacity that strikes us. I mean, I've had a guy younger than me, super smart guy, have a really bad stroke. And so we always think it's never going to happen to us. Great. Let me spray Murphy's repellent on you as you leave my office right after you've signed all the documents where nothing can go wrong. And you know, I'm stealing from my buddy Dave Ramsey by saying that Murphy's repellent thing, but there's this mindset sometimes of if I do this plan, something's going to go wrong. Well, that's silly. We all know it. Let's get logical. We're smart business owning people. So let's get logical. We didn't get here without a plan. We did not become this successful. Your listeners are successful because not due to a lack of planning, because they are planners. Make a plan so your business can succeed, so your family can succeed. I mean, that may be even more important. I mean, the reason you probably have your business is because of your family. I mean, the cart before the horse. No, the horse is your family. That's probably why you went out and started buying real estate, and now you're managing real estate, is because you wanted more time with your family. You wanted different and better things for your family than most people. Well, great. You did that step by step. Get a plan that handles your death and incapacity and their death and incapacity, because really, your children, I sit with parents almost once every 2 weeks. Someone will come in my office brand new. They've had a child predecease them. She was 44. She was 18. Your plan needs to survive not only you, it needs to survive everyone in there that you're naming, everyone that you're going to name to do a job for you or to receive assets from you, or both, are mortal. And you need to say, well, and if something happens to them, well, then we're going to do this. Now, we don't have to do this ad infinitum, ad nauseum. We just need to have three or four good steps in a plan so that nothing can fail and we can feel comfortable about it.
Let's talk about some of the assets that you would put in there, because to drill down in that, I mean, our personal home is in there, but you know, I think we could expand the use of what we're using our trust with. Maybe we should start putting some of our rental homes in there. What are you seeing other investors do with this?
So there's a lot of choices, and I know we're talking to people in different states, and so you would want to talk about some state specific things. But the trust, I think of it's the computer, it's the brain, it's the head of the body. And so I'm going to mix and match analogies or metaphors here when it comes to estate planning. A while ago, it was a bridge and a vehicle. Well, what's the brain driving the vehicle over the bridge? The trust can control your personal home because it's in the name of the trust, and you get your homestead exemptions and everything else in Texas. It's fine with your property taxes. Your personal car should be in it. Your personal bank account should be in it. Your life insurances and annuities and retirement plans should be payable to it as the beneficiary, because again, you don't know that your spouse is going to survive you. How many people are listening to this that have their spouse listed first on their retirement plan, but then have the minor kids listed as contingent beneficiaries? Well, the minor kids aren't going to be able to go file the claim and get the IRAs, right? Or the bank accounts or anything else. They're going to be held by a guardian that the court appoints for them until they turn 18. And the day they turn 18, your kids, people that are in this group, they're going to get handed $1 million, $500,000, $5 million, no controls, no protections. Even if your kids were super smart, prudent, and frugal, a bad person can come and take it from them because they have a car wreck or anything else. You're offering nobody protections. You're offering no one a true plan that could succeed. And you know what? Your kids probably aren't going to be prudent and frugal until you were, and you were in your 30s before you were probably very prudent and frugal about things. And so protecting them from themselves is okay until probably their 30s. Now, I've gone off on a tangent. Brad, put me back on point.
Well, part of that is we want to talk about, okay, a lot of us are investors. We might be buying rental homes for ourselves, or we would be recommending techniques to our investor clients that we manage for. Is the vehicle of a trust, and again, state specific, check your own state, is the vehicle of a trust worthy of like putting 123 Maple Street into for holding it for 6 months or 6 years or 60 years? Is it worth putting in there? And I'm especially talking about when you're doing different financing for techniques and basically investors acquiring properties. The trust is a protection method in comparison to an LLC. Because let me talk full circle on this, so it makes the question make sense for our audience. Is a lot of folks talk about having a series LLC. And then so you go form one LLC, and that could be, you know, water bottle LLC. And then series one is home 123. Series two is home 321, et cetera, all the way down to infinity. Now, that's a decent technique. I hear a lot of people talking about that. Is that good, better, neutral versus a trust, state specific? I mean, talk to me that, because we're talking to investors and first thing we say is, well, get an LLC. But if you do it for every home, you're looking at $1,000, $1,500, $500. There's a lot of filing fees and nursing and a lot of things that can be pierced very easily in an LLC, as you know, or C Corp or some of those others. But if they throw it into a trust and intentionally do that into the trust of whomever they set it up with, is that a better protection class for not only liability, but for also that asset? Talk us through some of those things.
So I will compare and contrast wills with a trust like we did earlier. So y'all think about that. We just talked about it. But I'm going to tell you, there is no trust versus an LLC or a corporation or a partnership. They are tools that work very well together. And so actually, I'm going to use myself as an example and be quite transparent. I have more than one LLC and I have a trust. Why? Well, if I owned an LLC, how would my interest, my ownership of the LLC transfer when I died? Well, I got to have a will. Well, we don't want to have a will, do we? We already know why. So my trust is the head. And not only does it transfer my personal residence and all my other personal assets, including financial assets, but it also transfers my assets in LLCs, multiple LLCs, series LLCs, limited partnerships, family limited partnerships, corporations, and whatever else I may own. Because we all need a tool, and we can either do it with a will or a trust, to transfer our interest in properties when we die. And so an LLC is something I do create probably on average, honestly, two or three a week for clients. I make a lot of them. I make limited partnerships, or what's often called family limited partnerships. Corporations are almost out of style because they just aren't nearly as strong and flexible, and they've been pierced too many times. But here's why. So the trust, the living revocable trust, it doesn't offer this complete asset protection and preservation until the first death. It's when it, when I always said it's the beneficiaries who survive the creator. And that can be a widow or widower and the children, of course, but it's when the trust code says the protections come in when it's transferred to someone else as a beneficiary. Okay, so we don't get a bunch of extra asset protection when we're alive with a trust. We get it when we die. Okay, fine. Okay. So when I go out and I buy the second home to rent it, when I buy the third home, I need a structure. I don't want it in my name. That's no good. No asset protection and no transfer on death and no plan for incapacity. Bad, bad, bad. So if I put it in my trust, I don't really get asset protection because it's not my homestead, right? And a house burns down and people die. That's huge liability. So I buy insurance, and no matter what else I do, I always keep good insurance. But what do I do to protect that home? Well, if I own the LLC that owns the home, I've protected myself. So I'm a proponent of corporate structure like LLC. So the limited liability company owns that home. If something goes wrong in that home, I don't own it. And so they sue. Now, they're going to sue everybody. Just be ready, right? Because that's what they're going to do. But if they sued Matt for Brad's home, I'm going to get thrown out of the lawsuit, right? Well, Brad, if you have an LLC and an estate plan done right, which you do, you're going to be okay as well. You're going to be poured out of that case. Now, your LLC is going to be a proper defendant probably, right? And so, because it owns the home and the home burned down, but it's going to be limited to its assets. And so the LLC protects your personal assets from the liability of the LLC. Now, if Brad's out there as an individual, runs over somebody, they're very upset and sues Brad. Well, Brad's the rightful defendant, right? Because you ran over them. Is your house in the LLC protected? Yes, they can't take your home from you. So you get two layers of protection by putting your rental homes, your rental properties, commercial or residential, inside of corporate structures like LLCs or limited partnerships. And so strong proponent of that. Remember, you still got to have the trust to transfer the interest when you die. Instantly, safely, sequentially. Then you get a whole other layer of protection because you have the trust and it doesn't hurt to be redundant. Then you have a plan for incapacity. So who runs your LLCs, your corporations, your partnerships when you're incapacitated? Your trustee of your trust, just like that person runs everything else in the trust.
So do you name the ownership of the LLC as part of the trust? So would I name XYZ Trust that I own, let's say, that owns, you know, LLC that has all of our rental properties. Is that how you work that?
Yes. So your trust really would be the technical and legal owner of your LLC, your LLCs, your series LLCs, or your partnerships.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes total sense. Okay, off the wall question. Is it any sort of benefit in giving yourself some secret squirrel name? So, you know, we talked about this when we set this thing up, but, you know, should we call it, you know, something just completely neutral? I mean, think of George Strait. I don't think he names his trust George Strait Trust so people can like stalk the guy. Just give me some feedback on that.
Yes. So more and more. Now, I'm going to tell you, 27 years ago, this hardly ever came up. But in the last 7 years, it comes up a lot. I mean, for my doctors, for some of my lawyers, and for some of my celebrities, and for some people who just are known around town, and San Antonio is a big town where I live in here, and I have clients all over the world now because they leave here going to Tokyo and everywhere else. But in any case, I'm having more and more clients say, how can I utilize these tools for anonymity? And they're the only way we can. I mean, we can simply call our living revocable trust whatever we want to call it. And we can certainly use our LLCs so that, you know, in Texas, we have great laws for these things, by the way. And it is okay for people from other states to take advantage of Texas law. If they want it, Nevada law, you know, you'll hear about Nevada, you'll hear about Delaware, you know, and it's okay wherever you live to utilize those laws. But in any case, what I can tell you is Texas offers anonymity for people using trusts through our laws and the way it works. And really, when we use corporate structures in Texas, you can go to the Secretary of State and look up the company and you can see who its officers are, but you will not see who the owners are. Okay. And so by using, some of my clients are going to use both. Some want three layers of protection almost for who they are and own it. That's fine. It's not hard to do. It's not that expensive. It's a little extra. They want it. They need it. We give it to them. So there's anonymity by using both or either.
Great answer. I love that part because I think, you know, some of us are a little nervous about, you know, owners or tenants tracking us down and trying to, you know, show up at our house or something crazy like that. So I don't think it's a serious issue where we are, but I'm just asking a question because some people will say, well, can I just name it whatever I want versus, you know, the Larson Family Trust, which is again, just kind of another way to name it. So this has been fantastic. And so what I want to do is I want people to help. I want them to understand how to reach out to you because you're just giving us a tip. And I really recommend people that are interested in this type of a situation to go research it and then potentially to reach out to you. So let's just say they want to reach out to you to say, ask some questions. How do they get in touch with you?
The best way is to go to our website. Brad, I'd have them go to spahnlawfirm.com. So spahn is a funny word. spahnlawfirm.com. Best way to go there.
And you can assist anybody anywhere, at least, you know, give them some advice and maybe refer them a local trusted attorney that you could say, well, okay, all right, if you are in northern Minnesota, you're not going to have somebody up there, but there's probably somebody in Minneapolis, let's say, for example, you could refer them to.
Yes. I mean, estate planning attorneys are a small niche. We're probably much less than 1% of practicing attorneys, people like me who focus on this. And so I'll help anybody who calls or contacts our law firm in any way I can. Be glad to help.
Appreciate it. Any closing comments you want to throw at us?
You know, I think I met you out on a skeet or trap field, actually, if we think about it, wasn't it?
It was. We were shooting trap and skeet together at the San Antonio Gun Club, and that's how we met and became friends.
That was a long time ago. You've been a good friend, and I've been honored to serve you, and I appreciate all the help you've given me and my family over the years as our realtor.
Appreciate it. Thanks for coming on, Matt.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Tenants not changing their air filters? Costly HVAC repairs and unhappy owners got you down? Filter Easy is a subscription air filter delivery service that solves this problem by shipping filters directly to the tenant's front door when it's time to change. Tenants actually change them, which reduces HVAC-related maintenance calls by an average of 30%. Filter Easy's no-cost-you solution functions as a profit center to give you back time and money. Call 1-800-308-1186 today to learn more.
This show is sponsored by the best home inspection software on the market for property managers. We endorse and use ZInspector as our software of choice for our team to document home inspections. We particularly like their 360 degrees camera system that produces amazing views of the interior room. Your clients will love ZInspector documented inspections you provide them. Visit www.zinspector.com to learn more.
This has been a podcast episode by PropertyManagementProductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.